from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 126 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason, and today I'm joined by Mondo.
Hello, Jason.
Hello. Unfortunately, Jordy's having some snow weather issues. He will not be able to join us. We actually rescheduled this a couple times. I was hoping to have all three of us on to kind of start the next, quote, phase, or whatever you want to call it, series. But, sometimes the world just conspires against you, and the show must go on.
Yeah, but, and for anybody out there in the Jody lives out in the east, southeast, I guess. So, and you know, that whole Midwest region of there, the whole middle region of the United States is getting hammered with snow and hammered with shitty weather. So, if you're affected by that or anywhere, stay safe, guys. It sucks.
And hopefully, this podcast can help you pass some time to stave off the cabin fever. I remember the first time I moved out of my parents' house after college. I lived in this house that was in this huge parking lot. It was on the property of a synagogue. So they bought a house and put it like in the back corner. And the day I moved, like the weekend I moved in, my roommate.
I have to ask some questions here.
Yeah.
Why? Why did they build a house there? Did they do it for?
No, they bought the house. It just happened to be like part of the property, and they bought.
Oh, I got you. Saying
very back. But there was no other houses around it. So they like rented it to like if the people coming from out of town or just related to the community. So they rented it to like a group of my college friends. So we all kind of rotated through there after college.
Oh, that's cool.
But the weekend that I moved in, there was a huge ice storm. And my roommate, his parents lived in town. So he decided to go hang out with them. So I spent like a whole weekend literally trapped.
By yourself?
By myself, yeah. I figured I'd use the weekend to like unpack and stuff, but man, yeah, 2 or 3 days, it creeps up on you.
Well, would you rather be trapped by yourself or with somebody else? And when I say somebody else, obviously your kids and your wife are excluded from that, but a roommate. Would you rather be trapped by yourself or with a roommate?
Probably with someone else, but at least like not like in the same room, but at least like, you know, you have space. Okay. At least you, like, you get to see a human being.
So it was a cabin.
After 2 days of not seeing another human being, I was kind of like, okay, this is going to, I see where this could go. All right.
Well, I hope if I ever get snowed in somewhere, it's with you, Jason.
Aww. Just because I got the warm beard.
But we also talked about how the heat ever goes out too. I can gut you and crawl through your body like a tauntaun. So
I generate heat, but I'm just a warm person. You just cuddle up. A couple announcements. So we weren't able to record last week, but we did have their interview with Bill Kopp, who directed the Tales from the Crypt series finale, Third Pig, and we had a lot of questions, and he gave us a lot of great answers. So if you didn't listen to that interview, go check it out. Gives us a lot more context for what they were going for. The other thing is that the first weekend in February is CreepyCon, which is a horror convention in Ontario, California, just like a half hour outside of LA area. Al Katz is getting a table there, and I'm going to be joining him on Saturday. So come say hi. To either him or me if I'm not there. I went to CreepyCon last year with Al. We had a great time. So it's a really fun time. Not as huge as some of the other conventions like in LA, but for an out of LA convention, it's good. It's a really good time.
Will you have Dads from the Crypt stickers by chance to hand out to our fans?
Awesome. Yes. I ordered stickers. They're in the mail.
Go get yourself a sticker in the warehouse capital of the world, Ontario, California.
Yeah, exactly.
We're trying to, my company's trying to do work at that airport there. And I'm like, what's funny is like, I still won't fly there because flights to Ontario are actually kind of expensive. But still, it'll be kind of cool to get that airport.
Yeah. Sometimes I look to see if it's cheaper to fly there and it never really is.
No. Nah, from here to LA, usually, because the flights go back so often, it's cheaper for me to fly to LA than it's for me to drive, but not to most places.
Right. And I'm a Burbank or die kind of person.
Oh, also coming up in Burbank, Dark Delicacies Bookstore is going to be doing the Phantasm and the 45th anniversary of Phantasm with Don Coscarelli and Reggie Bannister. And I think I might head out for it.
When is it?
That would be a good answer to have if I brought it up, but I do not have that answer. I think it's March.
So Joe Lynch and Barbara Crampton are going to be doing a signing of their Stuble Flush DVDs, but it'll be the Saturday, which is the day before this comes out. So
I saw that. Yeah. It looks like Saturday, March 23rd is going to be that. There's about a 70% chance I'm going to make it out there.
Nice. Well, let me know if you do, Mondo.
I will. You should come out too, so it'll be a good time.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're kicking off our next series, which is Black Mirror. It is created by writer, humorist Charlie Broker. He wrote all 27 episodes of Black Mirror. He also wrote on Netflix. He wrote a lot of things, but on Netflix, there's a series they come out with every New Year's called Death to, like Death to 2021, Death to 2020. Those are pretty funny. And again, it's an anthology series. They do sneak in some, quote, Easter eggs that kind of connects episodes, but officially they're not canon with each other. They're just kind of things to keep people entertained or to sneak in there for eagle-eyed viewers. The first episode, The National Anthem, it came out on December 4th, 2011. And I got a plot synopsis.
I got this, Jason.
You got it? Okay.
I got this. I mentally prepared myself to do a horrible non-Jody recap.
I brought up Wikipedia, but you can go for it.
So anyone who hasn't seen this episode or seen Black Mirror, we're going to get into spoiler territory pretty quick. I'm going to try not to do any spoilers in the synopsis. But you should really go and watch this. Everything I've seen from this series has been good to fantastic. Mm-hmm. I don't recall an episode that made me go, ugh. So I think everything on this show is pretty good. So the basis of this episode is you have a prime minister and he's been told that the princess has been kidnapped and they're going to kill the princess unless he follows the kidnapper's demands. What the kidnapper wants this man to do is have sexual relations with a pig broadcast over national television. And so as it goes, it's a big conflict as to whether or not he should do it or not. And at one point we see the prince, we see a severed finger getting mailed to him to show that the kidnapper means business. Cause of course I think, this guy's bluffing. And then every time they try to do anything to thwart it, the kidnapper is just a little step ahead of him. And I'm about to get into spoiler, and now I'm going to get into spoiler territory here. So he eventually agrees to go ahead with the act, and it ends up being one of the most highest rated things ever on television. It turns out that the kidnapper was an artist, and the finger was his finger, and he hung himself and released the princess actually, I guess what, this about an hour before the act happened.
Yeah, like 30 something minutes before that ever happened. So whether you did or not was irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. And that's pretty much where the episode revolved. Then at the very end, you can kind of see where, because he did it, his popularity went up because everyone thought, oh, he did this horrible act to save somebody. But his wife won't talk to him anymore.
Yeah. They flash forward like a year and they mentioned that the princess is now married and she's pregnant. So at least like, it seems like she's doing okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, his ratings are good, but yeah, his relationship with his wife is kind of in the toilet.
That's a very, very vague synopsis before we get into kind of discussing it, mm-hmm. because there's a lot going on in this and a lot of different threads and, a lot of really interesting stuff, especially in the year 2024, seeing how this played out.
Yeah. It's crazy. This episode came out 13 years ago. So, I mean, I was so excited to do it.
It's been that long?
2011. Damn, I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, and kind of the thing about Black Mirror, it's very Twilight Zone, where it's like kind of sci-fi, but a lot of it's but put like into a contemporary scenario, or at least made in two ways to try to tell a parable. And this, at least when I'm watching it now, it doesn't seem very far future, but I guess at the time it was a little bit. So it's interesting the things they try. So at one point, they're going to try to do a deep fake where they get a porno actor to have the relations with the pig with a green mask on.
And that guy was way too okay with doing that.
Well, no. He kept asking, where's the girl?
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. And then no one's telling me. He's like, well, am I going to meet the girl before we shag or something like that? Well, of course, this is British. So, and they said, oh, she's out in the trailer. And he's like a weird look.
Oh,
like,
man.
Okay.
So straight out of Clerks 2 with Kinky Kelly and the sexy stud.
Yeah. And well, it's interesting because again, the guy behind this all, I think they gave a name at some point, but whoever it is, like he like thought of all the technological elements. So like he asked them to have it like a handheld camera that's like moving constantly, so they can't just like CGI it together. And of course, like someone recognizes the actor and posted about on Twitter, and he's like following that. So like every step, you know, it kind of gets messed up, and then like they were able to track where he uploads the video from based on the size of the video and the time it went live. And of course, it's just an empty warehouse, and he knew they were going to be there, so he set up like a dummy. But there's this whole thing with the journalists who are trying to follow it. So it's like, is it a journalist's responsibility to report the news? But is this going to be detrimental to public safety or to the princess's safety? There's all these kind of like ethical questions that like it brings up, but doesn't dwell on too long. It just keeps. Yeah, I like the episode keeps things moving. There's a good momentum to it.
It's matter of fact, and it leaves you, the viewer, up to watch it and interpret it without spoon feeding it, which I really like.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a huge. We'll start dissecting this here. There's some pieces to this that really kind of, I don't say made my skin crawl, but no one really cares about the princess dying.
Yeah,
and the prime minister, Michael Callow, is not even going to go ahead with the act until they convince him that if he doesn't do it, until his public rating starts plummeting, and so all these polls come out saying no one's going to vote for him or they're going to hate him if he doesn't save the princess.
Right.
So he doesn't do it to save anybody's life. He does it because to save his own political career.
Right. Because the plot to do the deep fake becomes public, and then people are like having like instant react again. He only has like 12 hours, I think, from when he gets the initial message. Maybe it's 24 hours. Yeah. It's like all over like a day. So it's not like they have weeks or anything. So it's interesting how fast the information is kind of coming and going to get that public reaction.
And even the aides are so shallow and so all they care about, again, their political party. They keep bringing up the party's not going to back you if you do this, and you have to do this for us, the party. And it's a real, you know, look at our political situation today here in the United States, and it's that undying loyalty to your party. And furthermore, just there's a line in there that really, when he's going to commit the act, I don't know if it's his aide or his advisor or whatever, the close woman confidant of his, I'd say, she tells him, she goes, don't worry, I talked to a psychologist. And he said something to the fact of like, don't go too fast and you'll seem too eager. Don't take too long, because then, and she goes, and I talked to a psychologist about this, and said, yeah, make sure he follows that, because if not, people will look poorly upon him. Like, never caring for even his mental health and what it might do to him. It was all, again, like, even they're trying to coach him in the act of having sex with an animal, how he should act to maintain his political reputation. Fucking right. Just, ugh.
Well, disgusting. You see they gave him a Viagra or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they give him a pill, and then they also like have a screen with porn playing, I guess, to help him.
Yeah.
But oh yeah.
And thankfully they don't show the act, but then they also do this really cool thing where they're cutting from like a bar. There's a bar full of people, yes. and they have the TV on. And then there's one guy they showed, and he had the TV on, but he turned it off. He said, no, I can't watch this. But then at the end you see him watching it. He couldn't stay away. Well, and
then there's the shot of the people at the bar. Once it starts happening, they all kind of look down, like in disgust. Like they're like disgusted with them. Oh, they're just with themselves and the scenario, but they're all like, we were all hyped to see this momentous thing, but now we're kind of like, shit.
I mean, I don't know, dude, who would want to watch that, right? Like, who? Literally, if that happened in real life, I would not be turning the fucking TV on or looking for a video of it. It's pretty vile. And then I think one of the most telling points of the whole episode is at the very end when they talk about the princess being released before the act ever happened. They show the streets of London are just empty because everyone is glued to their TV. And I think it's a statement on how easy it is for the media can control people and manipulate people by keeping them all inside. And that was very intentional that he released her in order just to show that no one's even going to find out until after it happens, even though she was 100% safe, because almost giving him the out that if one person stumbles across her, you're safe. But of course that didn't happen.
Well, and then the advisor, when she hears this, she says, don't make this public. Don't tell the prime minister. No one should ever know this.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Yeah. So,
like, she's kind of playing it back.
And also, you know, made me think of it, because I'm not going to say I'm innocent of this. I have definitely watched some death videos out of curiosity. It's not good for your brain. Shouldn't do it out there. It is tempting, right? But you shouldn't do it. But, like, I think, though, if, you know, back when beheadings were happening overseas and they're sending videos out, I think, though, like, if that ever came out where it said, oh, we're going to there's going to be a live beheading of this politician at 6 p.m. on local TV. I fucking hope nobody watches that. Like, I really hope that I wouldn't want to watch it. And it really shows how people are kind of drawn to the taboo and almost how desensitized we are to things. And you made a good point about how you start seeing these close-ups of people being horrified at this act when they're actually watching it. And it's kind of like, careful what you wish for. You wanted this, you're so desensitized to this, but then when you see it, it's often isn't what you envision.
Right. Well, it's like, you know, when I moved to LA and me and my wife were just flicking around TV, and like at least a couple times a week, there'd be a car chase and they cut to that and we'd just be watching it. And that's something I was not used to watching. I was like, it was kind of hypnotic in a way, just to see what was going to happen. But you didn't know, like, if any second, like, if someone could get, you know, run over or something horrific like that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of crazy, too, when you think about it, right? Because it could turn into a gun battle. You could be sitting there having dinner and watching someone die. Like, it's...
I mean, I'm assuming there's a time delay on those things, but it was just a really weird thing that they do. And, you know, we've sat through many major events that were being televised relatively live, 9/11, January 6th, those kind of things.
I still remember very vividly. Everyone, I was, I think, 11 or maybe 12 when the O.J. Simpson, the infamous white Bronco chase happened. And we were all glued to our TVs watching it. And us as kids were talking about it at school the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, again, this is a little different. It's a little more farcical, but, you know, it's not without the realm of possibility.
Yeah, they definitely, and you can, I think the writer, Charlie, he's a background in doing comedy, too. And I think some stuff was intentionally meant to be, I don't want to say funny, but uncomfortably funny. Kind of like the scene with the porn star, which I thought was probably the most humorous scene in the whole thing. Right. Or when, I mean, it's not really humorous, but when they go to raid that warehouse, they see someone running away, so they shoot her in the kneecap, and it turns out to be the reporter that gets shot. And again, going back to the media never once showed any care or concern for the princess or the safety. All they wanted to know is how big of a rating are we going to get?
Right.
It's that fucking, that thirst, and it sucks.
Well, then there's the whole thing where that same reporter is like sending nudes to a guy she knows that works in administration in exchange for information.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like everyone's just kind of like leeching off of each other for their own needs. And, you know, we've all been in different scenarios where we need someone else and we kind of, you know.
I mean, how often are you sending nudes for information, Jason?
Not often enough. How do you think I go these interviews?
please stop sending us photos and we'll come on your show.
I know, they'll come on. Yeah, but I actually will say the production and the acting in this is excellent. Like,
yes.
Rory Kinnear plays the Prime Minister. He's done a ton of British television, but as far as American productions goes, he was in the James Bond movies. He was in Penny Dreadful. He was in Imitation Game. And then he also was in Men. Was that Alex Garland movie where he plays like all these different versions of men?
I did not like that movie.
Yeah, it's a weird ass movie.
I thought, well, yeah, I mean, we can do a review on Men someday if you want to, but if anybody wants to, but I think our good friend, our Fun on Whitney, wrote a really great review about Men over on Bloody Good Horror if anyone wants to check it out, because I think it really does highlight a lot of the problems with that movie, just FYI.
Yeah.
One thing about his acting, about Rory Kinnear and his acting in this, is there's a scene where he gets pissed at his aide and starts choking her. But the way he turns on a dime from being this politician to being this enraged person is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And I mean, as a credit, a testament to how good of an actor he is and how he just flips that switch and then flips it right back to going to politician mode.
Right. And then there's a scene afterwards. He's in the bathroom just puking. You know, like, oh, that's heartbreaking.
And the other thing is just the pig, the poor pig. And there's also a question, you know, I guess you can kind of question, and again, I'm a hypocrite and I'm going to say that like we, a lot of times in, you know, here in society, we're so far removed from some of the, like from just, we, you know, I'm a meat, I eat meat, you eat meat, you eat meat. And we go and we buy it in the store and a lot of those animals are kept in bad conditions and butchered for their meat, right? So I think it is saying something about how everyone's so far removed from that pig that no one cared about the pig. But the whole time I'm like, what about the pig? Like if I was on that set, I'd be cutting the pig loose and trying to save them.
Right. Yeah, I'm just looking through the Wikipedia a little bit and to see what some of the people have said. Richard Edwards of Games Radar said that that this shows that no one has any control over the spread of information. So like it used to be, you know, I would think that someone would send a videotape and then they would just, you know, they might send a couple copies out, but that's still control. But when you put something once you put something online, it's out there.
Yeah.
And then it's all about people. There's just so many outlets of information that people are going to get it one way or another.
I've talked about it before. With music is a good way to look at it. How we consume music nowadays, we consume music on an app on our phone that we can search for almost any song or any band and immediately start listening to their stuff. When I was younger, I've said it before, but I used to do wrestling tape trading and all that stuff. I spent a lot of money on and hours and hours and hours dubbing tapes and shipping them off and all that stuff's on YouTube. It's everything's there. Like if you did something stupid in life, and somehow a video camera, you're on YouTube somewhere.
Right. But I think the problem sometimes with that, like with music, is just there's just so much to try to look at and listen to. It's like you almost can't process it anymore. It's like bombardment.
I do feel it becomes with media, with our how easy it is to download something or watch something on streaming. I think we lose a little bit of we don't place as much of a value onto it as we should.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not tactile. You're not actually holding anything.
You didn't spend any money on it.
This monthly payment.
Yeah, you spent your $12 a month or whatever. You didn't spend, you know, like when I buy a record, it's $30 usually, and I spend $30 on it, and I can't wait to open it and put it on a record player. And I feel more, this sounds so fucking pretentious, but I feel so much more connected to it when I listen to it that way. Because I got to put the record on and clean it and then put the needle on. I have to get up and turn it over to listen to the next side. I think it makes you more aware of it. And even getting back into physical media with movies, I feel the same way. Like when I own something, I have so much stuff on the internet that I can watch that I just don't watch it because I'm like, it's just there. But if I buy something, spend my hard-earned money on it, you're damn right I'm going to watch it.
Right, because there's a level of ownership. You're owning a piece of that media that someone created, where like with streaming and stuff, you're basically renting the entryway to consume it, to borrow it for a small period of time. And you know, you look at Best Buy, it doesn't even carry physical media anymore.
They just stopped. Yeah. Even Target has like one little display now, physical media. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I get it, right? I'm not going to knock those businesses for doing that, because at the end of the day, it's a business and they have to look at the bottom line, but it's unfortunate. I mean, but also for anybody out there that's maybe thinking about getting back into physical media, I'm just going to throw out Culture Shock Releasing, Vinegar Syndrome, mm-hmm. Arrow Video, Cauldron Films, all kinds of Massacre Video, Severin Films, all companies that are making, putting out really, really high quality horror and genre releases that definitely worth your money, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cycle. So now those hopefully will go up in profit now that the big boxes aren't doing it anymore.
And going back to your spread of information, it is one of those. Also, the spread of misinformation is mm-hmm. probably even scarier.
Yes.
We saw it with COVID. We saw it with the general election, how it took a small group of people shouting this rhetoric of a stolen election or the rhetoric of mask, whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. But in how widespread that became a facet of everyday life, as opposed to just, they talk about the vocal minority on the internet, mm-hmm. which is realistically is kind of true when you think about it. When you look at how many people can dig their talons into certain aspects of media and really get an idea out there, there's not a few, but there's also not like millions of people that can do that. But what will happen is maybe a director, let's say John Carpenter, and this is not, we're not gonna say anything bad about John. I love John Carpenter to death. John Carpenter tweets out, I think Assassin's Creed 3 is the worst in the series. John Carpenter wouldn't say that. He loves Assassin's Creed. Right. So he said it's the worst in the series, and maybe it's because it was his least favorite. Doesn't mean he doesn't like it. But then what's going to happen is someone else is going to take that and misconstrue the words a little bit and repost it and retweet it. And it's going to turn into a snowball effect from this very simple comment. And really quickly, the spread of information, the spread of misinformation turns into a giant thing that didn't need to be.
Well, also now the whole communication network is global. We're like, mm-hmm. anyone can talk to anyone else, anywhere, anytime. You know, as long as you're connected. And that's like and that's something I think we're still kind of grappling with a little bit, because before that mm-hmm. we just weren't as connected. And like, that sounds like a marvelous thing, but as a society, I think we just aren't prepared for that kind of level of like hyper interactivity.
Well, imagine how different the conflict in the war in Ukraine would have been without quick access to information and social media. It'd be mm-hmm. a lot different. And and probably not for the better. Like the only information you'd be getting is probably from the Kremlin, just to be honest with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is the one nice thing we have. And, you know, us old motherfuckers will be like, yeah, it was better back in the day. It wasn't better. It was different.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying anything's better or worse. I think it just needs to recognize that how the overall effect, where you used to get your sources from your friends, from the newspaper, you know, from the radio, and that was your little silo. And again, that means that you weren't hearing as many voices, which I think has its own issues. But now anyone can break into that and put in an idea into there. And again, that's not necessarily a good or bad thing, but there are bad actors out there that can use that to their advantage.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, back in the 90s, 80s, early 2000s, is you would hear certain things that mm-hmm. everyone would hear from their uncles or from their cousins, and you'd repeat it. And it became just like, we just accepted them as facts until we became adults and researched this shit. It was like, oh, that wasn't true. You know, the Marilyn Manson rumor for forever about him removing one of his own ribs. Everyone heard that.
Or him being the guy from Wonder Years.
Yeah. And for all King Diamond, they said he was Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster.
Right.
And it's all this, but all this stuff became like these pieces of almost just accepted knowledge. So the one thing I'll say about modern technology is it takes 2 seconds to call someone out on some bullshit.
If you're willing to do it. Challenge that bias. Because some people are, because the whole bias confirmation, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted to hear, so I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah.
And not take the time.
If you, I still remember back when I was working at at Apple, we'd always have people come in and they'd say, have you heard of this issue before? And I dealt with like 30 computers a day. And I'd say, no, I haven't heard of this. Why not? It's all over the internet when you Google it. I was like, if you Google anything, you're going to find results. I said, if you Google a bear riding a unicycle, you'll find results. It doesn't mean bears are hauling ass on unicycles in the forest.
Well, even a step further, I think we're at a point where I think AI, they're having AI write articles based on what you're searching for.
Yeah. So
if you search for something that might not even be there, I'm pretty sure I've Googled things and I've gone to a site that felt very like AI created to try to give me a result for what I was looking for. Either Man. Above a real result or just wasn't one, so they created one for me.
And how many people will see that and maybe, or how many people are going to manipulate that AI and use it for nefarious means and for misinformation. So it's an interesting time and day that we're in right now. And again, I'm not going to be an old fuddy-duddy and say, oh, it was so much better back. No, it's different. And we have to figure out how to change with it. And I think communications and media has evolved so quickly over the past, let's say 10 years. Whereas from the time I was probably, and you too, right? I mean, you're like in your 50s, but we grew up around the same era. We grew up around the same time. For anybody that doesn't watch, Jason's not in his 50s. But
getting there, but no.
But I look from like, let's say, when I was 12 years old in 1995 to 2005, media didn't change a ton. We're still renting movies. Grant, you had DVDs. You had more ways to communicate when it came to cell phones and stuff like that. But it didn't feel like it was ever, it was a gradual change, a gradual shift. Whereas I think in the past 5 years, maybe it's been 10 years and I just can't think about it. We've seen a drastic shift in how all this stuff functions.
Yeah. I feel like it ramped up in the late 90s. It started ramping up in the late 90s. And it's just become, it was a smaller niche. Like, I mean, how many people in our high school like actually had internet that was on there like consistently? I don't think the majority of my classmates were in correct. The '90s, but I think in the earlier 2000s.
But you did what year did you graduate, Jason? 99. So I graduated in 01, and I will say by my senior year, a lot of people had internet. But if you just said during in 99, though, during my sophomore year, no, it wasn't very many people.
Yeah, like I don't know how many people had an email address of my classmate, my peers.
Right.
I can't think of any really that had an email address. No. Like I had an AOL account.
Yeah, me too. AOL. Good old AOL.
Good old AOL.
One thing that was interesting, too, is I still remember my freshman year of high school, I signed up for Computer Science 1. Mm-hmm. And myself, a gentleman named Robert, a gentleman named Zach, were the only three freshmen in that class. And the rest of it was all juniors and seniors getting their computer credit or taking the class, thinking it's going to be an easy computer class. But then we had to actually do basic programming. A lot of people dropped it. By my senior year, I was a student aide for the computer science teacher. And Computer Science 1 was like 95% freshmen. A ton of freshmen wanted that class.
Yeah.
Just to show you in those 4 years how technology had changed, how the internet became big. So maybe, but I still think though, even in the infantile days of the internet, it doesn't have anywhere near the reach it had now. It was very,
no, that's what I'm saying. It was there, but the reach was just starting. Like, I think we even had a computer class really. But like, I remember then I went to college in 90, like late 99. And then like suddenly everything is online. All the college dorms are wired. And, I remember that's when, you know, when Napster, when I first discovered Napster, my computer was too slow to run an MP3. So
the minute you said Napster, Lars Ulrich somewhere, he started looking around, his ears picked up. Like,
I have to burn my Metallica shirt for saying that. But again, this all kind of ties back though to Black Mirror, how it kind of takes these ideas and kind of puts them on the spotlight through, you know, a story. And again, this is a lot, very Twilight Zone-y, taking ideas and, you know, trying to explain, you know, the impact of our society in those stories. And this, especially using technology to do that.
I feel like you just thought that we were having too much fun with Tales from the Crypt. And you're like, let's bring this shit down a little bit.
It does feel very Tales from the Crypt, except without the camp. I mean,
yeah.
There is some really black humor in this, or dark humor in this episode. You know, it's from the absurdity of it. Like there's that, there's those people in the hospital that are all like the patients and nurses are all kind of watching together. And that some of their comments were pretty funny. So they're trying to like break a little bit of tension, but yeah, this is definitely a lot darker than Tales. But it was also like probably one of the closer things to Tales from the Crypt since it came out, as far as, you know, morality tales. But I've seen a good handful of Black Mirror. This one at least felt like the least futuristic of the ones. Like, it's definitely commenting about technology, but
yeah, we made a good point saying it was written 10 years ago or came out 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 years ago, it felt a little bit futuristic, but it feels like
deepfake. Deepfaking back then to that extent probably was unrealistic, but now, yeah, you could totally do that.
Yeah, 100%.
And then we've seen that people demonstrating things with politicians, you know, thankfully, at least as far as we know, like no one has really done that on a mass scale, but, or at least hopefully they have ways to, catch that if someone tries to post like a fake ad or something, but the idea is kind of terrifying.
If you ever shake a politician's hand, count your fingers. That's all. That's been always been my thought on politicians.
Oh boy.
Even the ones that get into politics for all the right reasons. Like, I get it. I think sometimes when you get a taste of that power though, it's not good. And I'm not going to say I wouldn't be, I'm not going to say I wouldn't be an insider trader if I was working for Congress or I was in Congress. So like, yeah.
Well, it's one of those things that's easy to say, oh, I wouldn't be like that until you're presented with it. You know, you have that real opportunity.
I've always said that about like when people give bands like, they sold out and made it big. Dude, anyone that ever played in a band and slept around fucking heavy equipment would have sold out. If you back a writer's truck up to, or a Wells Fargo truck up to my house right now, like, yeah, you want me to do a podcast on country music? Sure. Easy. Done. Or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Well, yeah. And then it's like, at what point do you become a Joe Rogan kind of, you know, like you just completely sold your soul. But
Joe Rogan's an interesting case because he really was one of the first people to really be self-made in the podcast world. But it's also a thing where he also had all that news radio money. So he was able to jumpstart himself. I hate what he's become.
Yeah.
I miss him just talking to fighters about MMA, which I loved. Or when he'd have like Neil deGrasse Tyson on and he just asked questions. Those are fun episodes. Now it's him just trying to confirm his own biases, and it's not how it used to be.
Yeah.
Damn it, Joe. Why? Why'd you have a
chance? We still beat him in the, Best Dad podcast of 2022 or something like that. So
I was about to say, I'll challenge him to a grappling match for that title, but he would fuck me up. So
yeah,
pretty much. A psychopath.
Yeah, and this is the perfect series to talk about as we head into an election season. So it can only get better from here, right? Right?
At the end of the day, the stuff in Black Mirror may look tame compared to what could happen politically.
Yeah, but again, we're not a political podcast. We're just a bunch of knuckleheads, so who knows?
Yeah, take anything we say with a grain of salt. We believe that LGBTQIA lives matter. We believe that everyone should love everybody, and there's no room in this fucking, there's no room, man, in 2024 for hatred.
Yeah.
Unless it's in music. That's cool. But, like just getting your hate out for music, but there's no room in 2024 in society. There shouldn't be any room to hate other people based on who they are.
But again, it's a very easy way for people to motivate other people to, you know, think a certain way.
Go back to the, you know, what happened in Germany in the 40s, and it was 100% just a smear campaign. They needed a common enemy. Mm-hmm. And here comes this megalomaniac asshole who's charismatic enough to get everyone, not everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, because there's a huge contingency, but it's kind of scary though. And you think like, I think that they said something like 35% of Germany was against the Nazi party, or 40%, and they're still able to do what they did. But hold on to the story. That's for our history podcast, because we're about the age where we have to pick the historical era that we're obsessed with. I haven't decided mine yet.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention about this episode? Go ahead.
No, except for everyone should really watch this. I think it's I think this series is fantastic.
I think I just said this episode especially just really good TV. It's like an episode 24 almost. It's almost like a parody of 24 in a way, where it's like kind of somewhat in real time. Obviously, it's condensed like 12 hours into an hour. It's very tense as people are running places and very fast and kinetic. It's directed by Otto Bathurst, who again did a bunch of British TV. I don't know, but he also directed some of the new Halo series. Which I haven't watched, but I've heard good things. But anyways, as far as like engaging TV, this episode is very, very good. So we'll just dive right into our ratings. We'll keep our same rating system. I'm giving it a 5. I don't think this is spectacular. Like I said, it's really entertaining. It's action filled. It's thought provoking in many ways. It sticks with you.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think it's one of those where I haven't watched this episode probably since it came out. Mm-hmm. And I knew, and I'll never forget it. I didn't forget it back then. It's not one of those things where I had to watch again and be like, oh yeah, now I remember. No, I remembered most of it very vividly. I do think if anybody's listening to this and watched it like I did 10 years ago, watch it again now, because I think you may, like I definitely took a lot different out of it this time than I did when I was a younger man, I guess.
Yeah, no, I remember watching. I mean, very vividly. I'm like, okay, when it all came to Netflix or whatever, I'm like, okay, let me see what the show's all about. In that first scene where they wake up the prime minister and they tell him, they kind of like tease out what's happening to kind of prepare him, and you as the audience are like, what is going on? What's this about? And then when they hit you with it, you're like, what the fuck?
So I don't even know then if I watch it 10 years ago. I watch it whenever it hit Netflix.
Yeah, me too.
So I think that's probably what, I don't know when that was. So I don't want
to. Yeah, whenever it was. But it's been long enough. We're like, yeah, I could remember. And before I rewatched it for this recording, I could have given you most of the plot beats because it was so impactful at the time.
Yeah, definitely.
But watching it again, you can kind of recontextualize those, a lot of little things that you pick up on. And I love the irony that the last episode, Tales from the Crypt, is about three pigs. First episode of the series we're watching after.
That is true.
It freaks me out a little bit, but here we are. All right. Mondo, bring us the song of the day.
Alrighty. So I picked something kind of on the nose because I had the thing of this band name when I heard this.
Is it Primus?
No. Oh God, Green Jelly would have worked too, right? Three little pig, let me in.
I might use that for the TikTok.
But I picked a band, a song from the band Pig Destroyer.
I was gonna suggest that, or like make a joke about that too.
Yeah, super.
Yeah, it's really on the nose.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, like I think when they were asked why they named their band Pig Destroyer, they're like, I don't know, thought it sounded cool. So I don't think there's anything really super profound behind the name. For some reason, I thought they're all vegetarians, but I think that's cattle decapitation, which is, they got lumped together a lot because they play kind of in the same gore grind genre where every album you're going to get 20 songs ranging from 30 seconds to 2 minutes.
I always thought Pig Destroyer was like a cop reference.
I don't know. I think they said it was just a, it was kind of just a band name, but who knows?
That's just my assumption. I'm not based on anything.
If anybody's really interested, just, you know, do some research on that and let us know. But a song I picked is off, I think, is their second full-length album, Terrifier. Also fitting in with our little horror theme here. And I picked this song just completely based off the name alone. I had to listen to it. I'm like, yeah, it's not really... their style of music is not always my cup of tea. It really isn't. Like, I've seen them live before, though, and unbelievably good live band. So the album I picked off Terrifier is The Gentleman.
We Destroy the Pig.
From Pig Destroyer. Yeah. Hey, at least they sedated the pig, I guess. That's... Yeah. Which, does that make it worse?
There's nothing good about that scenario. Yeah, it's all terrible. It's all terrible. Oh, boy. All right. Thank you. Since Jody's not here, Mondo, do you have some horror news?
I have just a little bit. Just as it was announced, I think, today by Toho. They will be re-releasing Godzilla Minus One, minus color in the United States starting January 26th. So I will be going to see that movie for a third time, and I am giddy with anticipation because that movie is the bee's knees. Also, for anybody out there that's a fan of obscure atmospheric foreign horror, Arrow Films just dropped their Coffin Joe box set. Inside the Mind of Coffin Joe, one of my favorite. I discovered Coffin Joe when I was super young and spent way too much money on the DVD box set that's shaped like a coffin, which I still have. I can't get rid of that ever. And I'm a big fan of Coffin Joe. And I think I'm again giddy with anticipation to get this box. It's in the mail. UPS has my package. So I'm pretty excited to check that out too. And yeah, I think that's all. I didn't really have a chance to look up any more than that. I just want to bring up those two little fun little nuggets of information.
I got two things. One is a new movie recommendation that just came out on Shudder is Destroy All Neighbors.
Oh, yes.
Excellent movie. So much fun.
By the time you guys listen to this, if anybody's a fan of the Bloody Good Horror podcast, that episode should be out by them. That was a goofy, fun Shudder film. 84 minutes. Never overstays its welcome. And yeah.
That's a movie that really could, like, another 10 minutes and it could have really ruined like the pacing. So yes. I'm like, I can't think of anything more you'd want to do with that movie. I mean, it's such a fun, odd movie. I loved it.
It's oddly charming by the end of it. Like,
and there's Alex Vincent in like all those prosthetics as this, Alex like, Winter. I don't know if he's what?
Alex Winter.
Alex Winter. It's just like, I don't know if he's supposed to be like Eastern European, but sometimes he was Scottish. I couldn't put a finger on it.
He looked almost like that. What's that? Dude, I'm sorry. I don't know. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He looked almost like the bad guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Barbossa.
Barbossa. Something like that. Yeah. I was like Davy Jones, but I don't know. But yeah, if anybody has Shudder out there, like definitely check it out. Like
highly recommend.
It's a fun movie. It's a good popcorn movie. It's not going to change your life, but I think you have a good time watching it.
Especially if you like prog rock.
I don't even like prog rock, and I think what's fun about it though is the prog rod. That's my porn name. we're gonna go from Glory Hammer to the prog rod. But even if you don't like Prague, I think not the country. We love you, people from Prague. But it's making fun of itself enough too to also know it's one of those pretentious genres out there. And I think so. Even if you don't like it, I think there's a lot of fun little threads in there that you still pick up on and enjoy.
Well, yeah, I like a movie that like takes a thing, like a thing that people can be obsessed with, and just takes it to an extreme level.
Yeah,
but in a fun way. And just in such a ridiculous, absurd level that you just have to laugh. It's just
yeah. I don't want to give anything away, guys. Just go watch it. Yeah, I can talk about that movie for a while.
Yeah. And then we had a new trailer for Radio Silence, new movie. They've been teasing it for a little while now, and it's a new movie called Abigail. And the new trailer came out. It's a Universal movie, and like I think it gives away too much.
Is it based on the King Diamond album by the same name, which is also a story and a graphic novel now? Okay.
I don't think so.
Is it set in the 1700s?
No.
Okay, then no.
It's a really good trailer, but again, I think it gives away too many plot points and too many like good like highlight moments, I think.
I think you posted that and then you said the same thing, so I stayed away from it because I'm I like Radio Silence, so I kind of want to go into this one.
It's Radio Silence, you know, they did Ready or Not and You're Next, or I think they did You're Next. You're gonna see it anyways, go and called, because at least, or you can read like a short thing, but don't just leave that because it gives away some really big twists, which I'm sure it'll still be good. But
it's one of those things when I watch trailers though, and I saw too much in the trailer, and I go to watch a movie. It's your brain's almost trying to figure out where does this scene fit in, and I just don't like that. So I try to avoid. Like, I'll watch trailers every now and again, but I'll usually either forget about it by the time the movie comes out, or I just won't watch it. The trailer.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for trailers, and like. Especially so, like the new Hunger Games movie came out, and I read the books, and I liked most of the movies that came out. I was into that, So I was interested in this one, but like in the trailer, they show a character and he has different haircuts. So then you kind of know the sequence of what's going to happen based on scenes in the trailer versus the haircuts in the movie. And like,
oh, wow.
I get, or like for the, one of the Star Wars movies, they like show the planet. And I thought the movie, and at one point I thought the movie was over, but then I was like, oh wait, they haven't gone to this planet yet that I saw the trailer.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of, and that's me being, you know, the way my brain thinks of those things.
No, I'm with you. And I think we've talked about it, but you know, it's not the director's choice or the writer's choice. It's marketing's choice on what they put in those trailers. Yeah,
I know. All right. We're going to take a dip into, actually, sorry. We have a new segment that we're going to call the Out of Touch Dad. We've talked about this a couple times in the last couple episodes about, you know, phrases that we, as, you know, men in our 40s, money, you reach 40, right? Yeah, you're 40.
Birthday. I'll be 41 in a month and a half.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so we're not with it as much. So we like to try to see what the kids are up to these days with what they're talking about. So we're kind of testing this new section, the Out of Touch Dad. It's kind of a working name. If you have better ones, please let us know. If you have phrases or words you'd like to see if we know, you can email us at dadsfromthecrypt@gmail.com or tweet us or Instagram us or send it to our Patreon, however you want. And we'll see.
Our Patreons will take priority though.
No, yes, of course. All right. This week, this is what I've heard a bunch over the last, I don't know. It's kind of floating around.
Let me see how this is going to go real fast. We're going to say the word. Neither of us know what this is. We talked about it before the show to make sure neither of us know what this word means. And then after we try to just guess what it means, then I'm going to read the Urban Dictionary answer and we'll probably hate ourselves.
Yeah. Okay, so the word is when you describe someone as a beast. Like I've heard, I can't remember how I heard, but they said, oh, so-and-so is so based. And I have no clue what that means. Like negative, positive. I'm at a loss.
So I already know there has to be some kind of negative connotation to this because my mentality would be like, I said, oh, that person's based. Oh, that means they're, they're mentally healthy. Maybe they're rooted in reality and they live in the moment, the world around them.
But like, it almost sounds like basic, which, you know, okay, that makes more sense. Like on face value, but yeah, maybe it's based because they're more centered or they're a little more reasonable. But again, that's the kind of thing where I think some people might say that as a negative. Some people might say that as a positive. So I have no idea. Didn't
back in the day being based meant you're fucked up on drugs? Is that a different term I'm thinking of?
I think a base head.
Base head. Okay.
Yeah. You're high on drugs. Like really out there. But yeah, based, I have no idea. So Mondo.
All right, guys, I'll give you 2 seconds if you want to try to figure it out yourselves. All right, let's look this up. A word used when you agree with something or when you want to recognize someone for being themselves. Okay. For example, courageous and unique or not caring what others think, especially common in online slang. The opposite of cringe, sometimes the opposite of biased. The latter usage is the original use as coined by rapper Little B. And the word originally took off on the meta ironic website 4chan. No one should ever be going to 4chan with the latter mean. When used in online political language, it can mean based in fact or the opposite of bias due to the number of people who saw it first being used seriously by the online political right and came to the conclusion that it was related to the phrase destroyed with facts and logic in reference to right-wing personality Ben Shapiro. See, I feel fucking... I said his name. It's like in...
I feel dirty just hearing it.
In The Lion King when he says Mufasa, they're like, do it again. No, don't do it again. If we say his name too many times, I'm like, manifest Ben Shapiro.
Oh, God.
We'll manifest Ben Shapiro, but he'll drive every vagina in a 3-mile radius.
So he's not me.
It was one thing Ben Shapiro has never seen. It's a WAP. But
okay, so who would you say is based?
So hold on a second. Okay, I can't even read these politics. I can't read the. I'm just not going to read.
Yeah, don't go there
because there are examples and. Yeah, they're pretty bad. Oh, here's one example in politics would be Leftist number one saying, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism. Leftist number two would say, based. I don't fucking know how people talk nowadays.
Healthcare is a universal right.
Based.
There you go.
It does not go well.
Should we have that section, based or unbased? What's that phrase, all your bases belong to us?
Oh, no. No. Fucking, that's a real throwback to the 90s. God damn. I would say that, healthcare is a universal right. We can talk about that. If anyone wants to argue that, you can just not, because it is.
All right. Well, that's a section that we'll see where it goes every week.
I'm going to ask. I'll ask my child who's 21. Like, what's a cool word you guys use nowadays? Because there's many times they've texted me, and I've had to ask for an explanation of what the shorthand means or the. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'll totally be open to shorthand as well. If it's some weird like texting slang that kids use, and you guys know what it is, throw it to us, and we'll try to guess.
We'll see if we know what it is. I feel like we educate people a lot on these really niche things that we're into. So this is our chance to learn something as well. So we can all learn something together.
Yes. I like, man, that's the most wholesome thing that's been said on this podcast. we're like Sesame Street for deviants.
There we go. All right. Going to our Patreon pit, I asked our Patreons, if you could deep fake your likeness into any movie or TV show, what would it be? Are there any other ways, good or evil, you would like to use this technology?
I'm really glad you didn't ask them if they'd fuck a pig to save someone's life, because that'd be...
I'd be
judging people both ways.
Exactly. There's no right answer to that. All right, Alyssa, our friend, good friend Alyssa, hope she's staying warm and safe.
Of the Silver Scream podcast, werewolf-themed podcast. They cover werewolf movies. It's a fun time. Check it out.
All right. She says, I just want to be a person Lee Pace brings back from the dead in an episode of Pushing Daisies. I'd use the technology to write lessons plan for me.
Mm. Yeah. I don't understand the first half of that, but I do understand the second half. I know Pushing Daisies. I can vividly remember like the DVD covers of the series, but or the intro maybe, but I've never seen the show.
Yeah, I never even understood the phrase pushing daisies until like a couple weeks ago someone used it. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like, I thought it was just some like obscure poetic thing, but now I get it.
Huh, interesting.
All right. Tommy says, none. I watch movies and TV to escape from my life. I don't need to see my mug pop up in Peacemaker or Barbarian. That's fair. Our friend Ashton says, I would totally use this. I feel like so much of my insecurities as a child came from the fact that people didn't look like me on screen. Able to put someone who looks like me and might help young people like me feel more normal would be amazing.
That's awesome.
I don't think I would put myself in a horror movie, but something more ensemble cast focused, like Dazed and Confused or Kicking and Screaming. The Bombback one, not the one with Will Ferrell, would be interesting. as far as TV shows, I'd love to be in an episode of The Golden Girls or maybe a fun Monster of the Week episode of The X-Files.
Man, that's super wholesome. And this is just proof that representation does matter.
Like,
it really does.
Can you imagine if someone deepfaked you, me, and Jodie into The Golden Girls?
someone please do this. Hold on a second. So who would each one of us be? Okay. We'll talk about this next week because I want Jody here.
Yeah, I need to refresh myself. I remember watching The Golden Girls when I was a kid because it was just kind of on, but I haven't watched that episode in so long. This is interesting when they talk about the ability to put yourself into a TV show might be possible. But like, I'm the kind of person, I don't like looking at myself. Like, I went to a bathroom the other day and there was like a full-size mirror as you're just kind of sitting there. I was like, this is weird. I don't like this.
I don't even like editing our podcast and having to listen to my own voice. Exactly. So I get it. I'm not a fan. I don't like looking at myself. So I don't know. I think what I would do though, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the day, there was a wrestler. His name is Kane. nowadays goes by his Christian name of Glenn Jacobs. And he's a big piece of shit. and just doubles down all the stupid stuff. So when he first came into WWE or WWF at the time, Jerry Lawler brought him in as the evil dentist, Dr. Isaac Yankum, DDS, to feud with Bret the Hitman Hart. So I would just deep fake myself onto Bret the Hitman Hart and watch him beat the shit out of Isaac Yankum for hours on end and enjoy myself.
I mean, you know where this technology is going to go is whether you want to put yourself in the porno or not.
I wouldn't want that. Nah, no, I wouldn't want to do that.
Too weird, but I know, but you know that's coming.
Well, yeah, it's coming. But it's better coming than going, Jason. But I also think I definitely deep. You know, I don't even want to deep fake. I just want to be in that scene at the beginning of Bride of Chucky where she straps a guy down to the bed and then kills him. I'm okay dying. Don't get me wrong. That's no big deal. But
oh man.
But the first like 10 minutes would be amazing, and then death. But whatever. We'll figure out what happens after that.
Okay. All right.
Oh, you know what'd be even creepier? Is this a deep fake someone's like face, not on like a star actor, but just in every scene, they're a background character. That'd be fucking creepy. Just because you'd be watching that and be like, oh, fuck, is that me? And then you see yourself all the time, probably drive you insane.
I think I saw something online. I didn't click on it. It looked clickbaity, but where it said that, like, there's a scene in the movie Liar Liar where you can see there's, like, a crash of some sort. There's some, I can't remember what it is. Something's happened. And there's, like, police and firefighters and stuff. And supposedly
the background... 100%. You can see Fire Marshal Bill.
Fire Marshal Bill.
It's at the very end where he's chasing the airplane.
Yeah. Okay. Is that so? That's real. That's not like a
100% true. It's 100% true.
Okay. Yeah. And I might have to go back and watch that now.
Also, featuring Jennifer Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly
plays a terrible human being. I would.
That scene fine. In the Chucky series where she's watching Liar and Liar Nonstop is gold. All right, Mondo, where are we going for dad advice?
I have something.
Yeah.
I just thought of this. So there's a video that went viral from Las Vegas about, I think back in November, a police officer was in his police truck and he got called to the scene. There was a naked guy running around. The naked guy opens his door, pulls the police officer down, throws him on the ground and steals his truck. Imagine that you're a police officer and your truck gets stolen by a naked man and you couldn't control him. What would you do? I'll tell you this police officer did. He said, fuck it. I can't ever have that happen again. I need to put my ego aside and I'm going to learn jiu-jitsu. So he came to he's been coming to our jiu-jitsu school, which is really cool.
Oh, cool.
Granted, his partner trains with us too. But the dad advice of that is you have an option when bad things happen in your life or you make mistakes or you're not prepared for something. Your option is it'd been very easy for him to just quit the force, go do something else, like move on with life. But it'd be very easy for him to say, oh, you know what? The guy was naked and on drugs and I didn't want to shoot him. Right. Easy. But the fact that he's like, no, I want to be better at my job and not ever have that happen to me again. And taking ownership of the situation and trying to make it better. That's kind of what I want to highlight in the whole situation is I'm really proud of the guy for coming in and I'm really proud of him for trying to better himself and become a better police officer. No matter your feeling on cops, either way, they should all be better. And that's I think that's can really be extended to a lot of people and a lot of aspects of their life. And it's something that I think we do a lot without realizing it. Taking challenges head on and not always picking the path of least resistance, because it's easier when the path of greater resistance will yield a more, a better result or a more noble result, I should say.
No, that was a huge lesson that it took me a long time to learn in my 20s was, you know, sometimes instead of fighting against something, you know, just admitting you're wrong. And, you know, figuring out what I can do better from it. Like a lot of times, you know, at work and stuff, you know, I would like come up with excuses or, you know, I wouldn't say gaslight, but just try to reframe it. But what I eventually learned was it's better to admit your mistake when you did make a mistake and, you know, fess up to that. And people, most of the time, you know, if you just fess up to whatever happened, you know, as long as it really was your fault, you're not just BSing, people respect that way more than, you know, trying to bullshit your way through it.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who's been in any business for a long time or they can see right through a lot of that bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked at Apple for so long, almost 10 years, to where when I hear management say something like, no, that's not going to happen. I see right through this. And, or when someone make a mistake, I'm like, no, dude, that's not why you made that mistake. It's okay you made the mistake because you didn't know. It's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's get better from it. And like, I used to tell my team at Apple, all the techs, I'd be like, if you make a mistake with the repair or something like that, I can logically see how you got to that conclusion. I'm never going to be upset at you. We're going to talk about it, and I'm going to tell you the right way to go on that and maybe what you should have done, but I'm never going to be mad about it. I'm never going to yell at you for it. I'm never going to write you up over it because, no, you logically got from point A to point B, and you made a mistake, and I would have some people sit there and just fight me on it. And I'm like, dude, like, it's no, that you're wrong, and it's okay to be wrong, like you said, as long as you're willing to admit it and become better because of it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my wife's been watching Top Chef lately, and sometimes the chefs like mess up a dish, or they don't get like they mess up on something technical, and they always try to come up with an excuse or something like that. I'm like, wouldn't the judges at least like respect you more if you just say, "Yeah, I messed up this. I didn't do the right thing, or I was under stress or whatever reason." Like, just admit to it instead of trying to like come up with excuses.
I mean, we've all. I guarantee you, all of us have forgotten to do something at work, right? Like your boss asks you to do something, you write it down, or if you get to write it down and you get busy, you're like, oh, I'll get to that right now. And you get busy and something else happens. And there's two ways you can handle that. One is you can say, oh, I didn't get to that because and there's someone I know that does that all the time. Or you can say, shit, I'm so sorry. I forgot about it. I got busy. I shouldn't have. I'll take care of it. And the second part, I promise you, you're probably never going to get a stern talking to about that because everyone realized, oh, human made a mistake, owned up to it, fixed the problem, got better. And I think it's a really important thing in life. And like you, Jason, it took me a lot of years to learn that.
Yeah. My father told me this story when he was in college and he went to a civil engineer, went to Georgia Tech and he studied civil engineering. And for some reason, I think he was sick or whatever, and he missed like the first week of class. And they had this project where they were designing an airport. And the teacher, professor, whatever, gave out the specifications. And for whatever reason, he wrote them down wrong or got them secondhand wrong. And he built the airport such that it would take off into a mountain, like the last thing he wanted to do. So when he turned it in, the professor like said, you know, you did this, and it was a but he liked the work he did so much on it that he did in the build. It was like some sort of model or something like that. He used it as an example to teach kids what not to do and that it's okay to mess up, but if you're going to mess up, do it well.
Well, you know, too, and it's also one thing I learned from being in leadership positions is I would, and you do this as a parent all the time. So do I, is I will tell my child, hey, I know what you're thinking, but you should do this. I'm only telling you this. I made the exact same mistake you're about to make. Like, yeah. I've been there, I've done it, I've seen it. And sometimes, it's going to go in one ear, not the other. I get it. When I was a kid too, I wasn't listening to no 40-year-olds knew what the fuck they're talking about, right? But I think in a work setting, it's a very powerful tool when you're, especially with your subordinates, when they can see that. For the record, I don't have any subordinates anymore, but I don't want people to think I'm like a crazy boss or anything. Well, I'm a boss, just not on that term. Right.
But
when they can see you being vulnerable, it makes them feel much more okay to also, instead of trying to like hide their fuck ups, just be open about their fuck ups and seek you for advice on how to be better or already have. I can't tell you, like, I had a couple technicians who I love to death, and they would come to be like, yeah, hey, I already know I screwed this repair up. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I'm fixing next time. But like, cool, man. Like, I got nothing to tell you. So I see why you made the mistake. I love the fact you already have a solution and we're good.
I mean, in turning around back to parenting for a second, though, there's going to be times where you can try to teach your kid how to do the right thing or the mistake that you made. And they just have to learn on their own after. Like, they're just not going to listen. They're going to do it their way and they have to learn the hard way. And hopefully you can teach those things when they're like little and it's just little things. And hopefully it's not like when they're, you know, a teenager and they, you know. That's when you can really start fucking things up, but
you know they're gonna fuck things up, and but there's no sweeter phrase than "you are right." I was right.
Okay, well, I think that wraps up another episode, Mondo. Good job, we did it.
Oh, I know where you're going. Because I'm not prepared to answer any
questions. I know.
No questions.
All right. Next week, we will be covering... Next week, we'll be looking into the Black Mirror with Season 1, Episode 2, 15 Million Merits. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you would give us a rating and review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Adios.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you axe for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.